You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 6, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Never Trump off-Broadway fundraising production of Waiting for Godot. It's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Hey, Driftglass.
Hey, Blue Gal.
What a week.
Kind of boring, yeah. Not much going on. Just sort of picking my toes, wondering what we're going to do on the weekend. Maybe pancakes. I don't know. Pancakes are always good.
It's Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day.
Including our moms.
Yes. Happy moms to every Mom Day to everyone, all the moms out there, especially ours, who are both awesome.
Awesome moms, yeah. Yes.
And to my wife, who's an awesome mom, too.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So Mom's Day is a wonderful day.
This is why I don't fear a Hillary presidency. Because I have been surrounded by smart, strong women my entire life. And it doesn't bother me in the slightest. In fact, it disturbs me. When, you know, the opposite is true. When dumb is considered, and pliable is considered an attribute rather than a defect.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me. That's what just do you want for, you know, my life, huh?
Well, since it's been such a crazy week, I thought we would take it one step at a time. Again, these crazy weeks, we probably are better off doing them chronologically.
Yes.
And we recorded and published a podcast last Friday. So starting with Saturday, it was the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Again, boring, typical.
No, nothing happened.
Nothing happening.
Or nothing happened. No, actually, what I found interesting is it was the 10th anniversary, 10, of Stephen Colbert's amazing, set-the-standard, iconic White House Correspondents' Dinner. The speech that totally changed the White House Correspondents' Dinner from a beltway institution to a celebrity festooned, nationally televised. You know, no one was ever going to miss what happened at this thing ever again after Colbert.
At which Colbert never got a laugh or got very.
No,
very
it was really the room was not welcoming to his shtick, which but the internet was.
That was the point. Pantsed basically the entire Bush administration and the Washington Press Corps and the whole concept of this horrible incestuous event in front of all of them on live television in front of millions of people.
And so did Larry Wilmore. I mean, he really held up the standard that Stephen Colbert had set. And I thought the speech was great. I mean, I don't know. Some people panned it and said that his timing was off and he left off some jokes and so forth. And
he did. It was a stand-up routine. And some of it worked really well and some of it didn't for my money. But as an act of subversive art, it succeeded admirably. And what it was trying to do, was say certain things to people sitting in that room that they did not want to hear, that you will never hear anyone ever say on television.
In the Beltway media.
In the Beltway. That's right. Even though it's the truest things you can imagine. It's stuff we talk about on this podcast every week.
Yeah. And the one that keeps getting mentioned over and over again is the Morning Joe line of, you know, Morning Joe is so far up Trump's ass that they bump into Chris Christie, which, you know, nobody at Chris Matthews had to take a drink so as not to laugh.
Yes.
But nobody at that table, at the MSNBC table, was laughing at that.
No.
And, you know, it just goes to show you that how much power Joe Scarborough has at that network.
Well, and saying that it's the significantly fewer black correspondents.
Yes, exactly.
It's like there's so many missing black people that it's run by Boko Haram. It's like, which is a pretty ferocious thing to say.
Yes,
but
it
also happens to be true. MSNBC is in the middle of decapitating its network. Not in the middle of it. It's done.
Yeah.
Getting rid of liberal voices and packing the house with either muzzled liberals who will go only so far and once they hit that invisible fence go no further, or Joe Scarborough.
Yep. And I wanted to I don't want to jump all over the place, but since we're talking about Joe Scarborough, let's talk about what happened today this morning. First of all, it only took 4 days for Joe Scarborough to have Donald Trump phone it in again. Yeah. And granted, it was the morning after the Indiana primary. You would want to have the winner of that primary on your show if you could.
Sure.
But allowing Donald Trump to phone in interviews from his golden toilet, as I have put on Twitter, if you need an image of that in your mind, you can go to my Twitter stream because I photoshopped it.
Game of Thrones, baby. Game of Thrones.
Game of golden toilet thrones.
He's sitting on a throne calling his friends Joe Scarborough going, oh, excuse me, just a second. I had to squeeze out a Christie, but I'm okay. All right. What were we talking about? Yeah.
Man. And there's no way to honestly interview someone who's on the phone.
No.
You cannot do follow-up questions well. You can't figure out whether they're, you know, picking their teeth or scratching their ear while they're talking to you. It doesn't matter. And it is such a privileged thing that Scarborough and other networks have given Trump and given no one else.
Yeah, and you can wind that back a couple more steps. There is no honest way for Joe Scarborough to conduct an interview with someone Trump. He's giddy about.
Yeah, that he depends upon for donations to his charities. Yeah.
For his ratings.
Yeah, and for his ratings.
Yeah.
And for his ratings. Let's not forget that. All right. So then this morning, Rob Reiner was on.
Yes, he was.
And Rob Reiner, I don't know why Rob Reiner was on, because I only watched the clip.
He has a movie coming out.
Okay.
And he's Hollywood.
He's a director. Royalty. He's a director, yeah. So what I think we really have to tell the whole story, because it is so
Go for it, baby. Joe, go for it.
That Willie Geist was sitting next to Mark Halperin. First of all, just picture that in your mind. The two of them sitting side by side. Joe and Mika are there. And here is Willie Geist and Mark Halperin, you know, consuming air. Yes. And Willie is doing the questioning and saying, you know, not everyone watches this show and takes an instruction from us how to vote. How can you explain the appeal of Donald Trump, that people actually agree with him? And, you know, they're not listening to us tell them how to vote.
Now, this is an example of how fat, slow pitches across the plate are deliberately whiffed by the typical Beltway waxwork centrist douchebags who are on the air. Because a question like that is the kind of one that you'd get a mouthful of argle bargle about both sides from everyone else.
Yep.
This is also an example of how if you put any honest liberal across from any TV centrist or conservatives, they can knock it the fuck out of the park.
Yep.
Easily. This is why, again, for the most part, liberals are never allowed anywhere near Willie Geist or Mark Halperin or Joe Scarborough.
Exactly.
Because, and resume.
Well, and as you say, an honest liberal, a Driftglass or a Blue Gallon being delivered that softball would say, well,
boom.
You know, the reason is you have Donald Trump talking to you from his toilet yesterday morning and last week and the week before that and the week before that. And he is given unfiltered access to people and given the cachet of your show and to spout off whatever he wants to say unquestioned. So that's why. So what Rob Reiner said in one sentence was, well, there's a lot of racists in America.
Yeah, in the Republican Party.
And the pearl clutching immediately happened. You didn't really say that. And Mika actually put her hands to her cheeks. Yeah, like, oh my gosh, how can you say that? Mm-hmm. And it was as if there was all of a sudden Bob the Builder, 100 Bob the Builders around Rob Reiner with hammers, pushing him back into a box that says, it's not all Republicans, it's not all conservatives, it's only a few, it's only the dirty few, and they're bad examples of Republicans, and they aren't our party, and both sides, and and Bernie Sanders people are racist too, and on and just
it
like
was. It was the entire tool bag of media and bullshit about here's a subject we're definitely not going to talk about. So let's exactly build a wall around it as fast as possible.
And all of them were doing it. And I'm telling you, Rob Reiner pushed right back and said, You do not see people with swastika tattoos at Bernie Sanders rallies.
Right. There are no skinheads at Bernie Sanders rallies.
And I was so proud of him because he brought Joe Scarborough into the picture.
Right. This is a Joe Scarborough tactic, which is let my minions bash my guest while I sit back and smirk. And if I need to step in, I will. But I just, you know, I'm taking a break.
But Rob Reiner wouldn't let him do that. Nope. Rob Reiner said, you have been a politician, you have spoken before audiences, and I can well imagine that if you stood up before an audience and saw a bunch of Klansmen and skinheads and Nazis in your audience, you would say, I don't want to be represented by these people. I don't want their support.
Yep.
And Donald Trump doesn't do that. And that's when Joe Scarborough basically surrendered and said, he's got to move away from that.
Yeah. Like,
isn't it just a little bit late for him to move away from that? He's not going to move away from that. And that's what Rob Reiner says. He said, he's not going to move away from that.
Why would he do that?
His base. That's who has brought him to power.
Yeah.
And also, that's who Donald Trump is. Donald Trump likes that kind of thinking.
He does.
So,
that's like Carl Palladino, you know, horse porn aficionado and local thug and gubernatorial candidate Carl Palladino. You know, wrap your head around Carl Palladino, head of the Department of Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. Wrap your head around Joe Arpaio as the United States Attorney General.
Give them a fancy suit and a high-rise Manhattan office and a million-dollar base from which to grow your business, and you've got Donald Trump.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
And there's an absolute symbiotic, creepy, incestuous relationship between Joe Scarborough and his television show and the needs and desires and political ambitions of Donald Trump, and always has been, right from the very beginning. It's been very clear. It's been very open. Everyone at MSNBC is smart enough, because they're all smarter than rutabagas, to know that that's what goes on in the morning at their network. They are just obliged by contract not to talk about it, even though it's horrifying.
That's what I thought was ironic about the whole thing, is I went back and just Googled I just searched at the MSNBC.com website for Trump racist.
Yeah.
Those two words. Yeah. And I found an entire segment, recent segment, within the past 2 weeks from a Chris Hayes show where he is interviewing people talking about white supremacy within Donald Trump's campaign. Then I went and looked again, and there is an entire segment where Lawrence O'Donnell is using his time, his last word moment at the end of his show, to talk about how goddamn dangerous Donald Trump is because he is a front man for racism in America.
Yes, he is.
And he just went full blown for 4 minutes, over 4 minutes, about how we have to stop this guy. This was in 2011.
Uh-huh.
Not new, not recent, not talking about Carl Palladino. This was 2011. We have to stop Donald Trump because he's a racist, a front man for American racism. Then I found an article on MSNBC.com, again, talking about racism within Donald Trump's mindset and how he has always been within New York City, you know, on the white man's side, right?
Yeah.
That's been his M.O.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this is the media that Rob Reiner consumes.
Right. He understands
MSNBC.
Exactly. He understands
the
media.
This, but he made the mistake, and I don't think it was a mistake. I think it was conscious, but he made the quote-unquote mistake of repeating what he heard at MSNBC nighttime on Morning Joe.
Which you're not
which
allowed
you don't
to do.
Do. There's a wall, and you don't cut. There is a wall, right?
Yeah.
There's a 12-foot-high wall between Morning Joe and the rest of MSNBC.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a vast wasteland in the middle of the day where it's basically a camera pointed at whatever podium Donald
CNN.
Trump may or may not
it's
show
CNN.
Up at. It's
yeah.
CNN.
Yeah.
And then in the evenings. And let's give Joy Reid a shout out.
Yeah,
She's getting her own show this Saturday.
One of the smartest people on television.
Which is nice.
That's
absolutely great. And that's a wonderful thing. But I'm glad of that. I also do not believe for 1 minute that MSNBC is not Fox Lite. It's not a shithole being run by Roger Ailes Jr. practically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being run by men who would sell their own grandmothers on Etsy in a second if they thought it would boost their ratings.
Yeah.
So, you know, great. They fired Melissa Harris-Perry. They got shit for it. Said, what do we do? What do we do? Shit. Got to give a spot to somebody. Okay, Joy Reid. We'll give her a show. And they'll shut the liberals up. That's the object, and she'll I assume she'll do great with it. I hope she has plenty of latitude. I think she has a lot of integrity. I don't want to see fewer African American liberals on television, even if she has to work at a whorehouse like that. You know, you're the piano player in the parlor,
right?
And you're a really good piano player, and I appreciate your music. But I'm not going to pretend that the structure that you play in is anything other than a criminal enterprise designed to get Donald Trump elected and ratings.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it's really disturbing to me that I have to make that distinction between what one talented person is doing on a major television network and what the rest of that corporation is doing to my democracy. And I don't like splitting my brain that way. It hurts my little head because I'm a liberal. I can't entertain more than one thought at a time. So, but Rob Reiner did the Lord's work today.
He did.
He beat him down. And but here's the thing. The end of the story is tomorrow Joe Scarborough will go right back to having a job for life.
Yeah, right.
Nothing will change. It will be forgotten. It will be swallowed up by the great dumb media. It will never be spoken of again at MSNBC.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
Liberals will pass it around like a dirty postcard, like we do. We'll remember, because our job is to remember these things. But it will not affect anything, and it will not change anything. And no one in the executive suites at MSNBC is going to lose a minute's sleep over it. Because you know what? It was great TV.
Yeah.
It was great. It was conflict. Arr, dinosaurs fighting. Arr. And tomorrow, you know, we'll do a cooking show.
And well, and everyone, every employee of the network towed the party line at that moment. Yeah. So it didn't hurt anybody. Let's back up again.
Yes.
Let's back up. We're going to pretend that the Indiana primary hasn't happened yet.
Okay. Let's all pretend. Put on our yesterday caps.
And Ted Cruz as candidate.
Yes.
Had quite a little meltdown,
man,
on election day.
Yeah.
As I said on the most popular tweet I wrote all week, we've reached that moment that we reach in every campaign where Lee Harvey Oswald is trending on Twitter.
Yes.
This was weird. And I mean, this is a weird season anyway, but this was weird. Donald Trump taunting, lying Ted Cruz with a story from the National Enquirer about his dad handing out pamphlets with Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah.
And that, you know, after an exhausting campaign and being up 14 hours a day on your feet trying to get people to vote for you in Indiana for 2 weeks, nonstop, 7 days a week, to have someone say, and by the way, your dad hung out with the assassin of JFK. You know, that... And this is going to be taken seriously by the media because Donald Trump said it at that. And you're down 6 points to this asshole. I mean, I can see why Ted Cruz melted down. I understand it. But he scorched the earth at that moment.
He did.
And it was, he's a liar. He brags about VD being his Vietnam. I mean, it went on and on for moment after moment after moment. And the thing was on Twitter and my email blew up and it's like, everybody turn on your TV now. It was one of those moments of you all have to see this live because it's real and it's going down.
Well, Chamberlain, the story goes Neville Chamberlain, the reason that Hitler scheduled the armistice talks. At a place where there was no smoking, as he knew Chamberlain had to have a cigarette.
Oh.
And it drove him nuts. He was like, finally, he was like, whatever, man.
Yeah.
I need a smoke. Donald Trump understands how deals, not how deals are done in terms you and I would understand, going to a financial advisor or going to the bank or doing a mortgage. He understands how sort of deals are struck among dinosaurs. And he needed to put Ted Cruz down. He needed to knock him out in Indiana. And then he doesn't have to worry about anything anymore because he's out of the race. So what do you do when your opponent is exhausted and frayed and is looking at his poll numbers and seeing he's going to lose, probably lose big, and he's bet everything on this, and he's out there, you know, his wife is looking at him like, every step he takes is awful.
Yeah.
Everything he does makes him look creepy and terrifying, and that he frightens children and his wife thinks he's a fucking weirdo. So how do you put and he's exhausted. So what do you do? You know, his dad probably was involved in the Kennedy assassination. Boom. You know, it's just out of left field. It's just some fucking lunatic punch out of left field, which a calmer, more well-rested, less desperate candidate would have shrugged off.
Yeah.
You know, what do you want? Donald Trump's a liar. He lies all the time. He's lying about this. Let's talk about my trade policy. No, he launched, and on the day of the election, if he scorched earth a week before, maybe it makes a difference.
Yeah.
But he went ballistic long after, you know, the missiles were in the air. There's no way to, you know, Indiana was already outvoting when he went on television and started screaming and raving about all these true things about Donald Trump and all these true things about Fox News.
Yeah.
You know, let's not forget that part of Ted Cruz's rant was the people at Fox News, Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch at Fox News, have decided that Donald Trump's going to be president. And the media's against me. Well, the media's not against you. You're just a creepy, awful person. And you deserve to lose because you're a creepy, awful person. But you're right. Fox News is in the tank for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have to be.
Yeah.
Because he's the fascist that they think they can control, and you're the one they think they can't.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. But this is your party, man. Surprise, well, surprise.
I think that's the question, then, that becomes the theme of our show, the core of our show for the rest, which is, this is your party, or is it?
Yeah.
You know, because this is now, because everyone has left, Trump has left everyone in the dust. Kasich pulled out, which to me was a surprise. If you're the last man standing against Trump, why not give it a shot? But I assume he ran out of money.
Yeah.
Anyway, the idea that now Trump is the only one left of the 17 people running for president.
Yep.
And no one saw this coming. No one saw that this was going to be, that he was for real. No one in the Republican establishment or mainstream media.
No one outside the liberal blogosphere.
Well, liberal blogosphere took him seriously, but a lot of people didn't.
Right.
And frankly, I agreed with Lawrence O'Donnell for a long time and said, you know, when he has to release his tax returns, when he has to really go up against reality in terms of who he is, and people are going to reject that. And I underestimated mm-hmm. how angry Republicans are, Republican-based primary voters are at their party.
And how little they care.
And how little they
about
care.
About reality anymore.
Right.
They really don't give a shit about the air they breathe, the water they drink, or whether the sun rises and sets in the east.
Yep.
It doesn't matter to them. Reality, they just divorced it.
Right. And they've divorced it for two reasons, I think. One is they've been fed a diet of Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and Drudge for 30 years.
Yeah.
And so reality, what's that? You know,
it tastes bad.
Right. It's everyone is a rhino unless they agree 100% with me.
Right. And number two, if I may.
Yeah.
They would have to admit liberals are right.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And they'd rather die than do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Well, and I think, too, the economy for the Republican base is terrible.
It is, as it
is
for the rest of us.
So you're willing to vote for anything to change that. And really, we have to give Donald Trump credit for one thing, which is he is the only one of those 18 or 17 people running for president who stood up and said to blue-collar, unemployed America, you have a right to an economic future, and I'm going to fight for that for you. And now, it's bullshit.
Right.
He's not going to reopen the goddamn coal mines. That is just a lie.
No.
Any more than he's going to rebuild his bankrupt companies and hire back all of the hotel cleaners that got laid off when he lost his Taj Mahal casino. The economy, the reason those coal mines are closing is their product isn't desirable anymore.
Right.
And the product that can be brought to market is being done by machines.
Right.
So automation has done as much to fire coal miners as clean air legislation. So and the price of coal is higher now than the price of solar, if you can believe that.
Right.
So there's really an economic problem that will not be solved by reopening coal mines. That's not going to happen.
There is no future in it.
Yeah.
There literally is no future in digging coal out of the ground and burning it for fuel.
Right.
You can do it for a while
longer. And that's not just environmental. It's not just because it's environmental. And that's, I think, you know, coal miners want to blame Obama and his clean air initiatives and so forth for their plight, because that's easy to understand. And not blame the coal mines, which are being automated and which are expensive to run. And so it just, Trump's not going to do that. And that promise was just the biggest lie of the week in my book.
But once again, there is a party that has worked rather hard, especially on the manufacturing sector, about which I know a great deal, to retrain workers, get them moving towards jobs that are not exportable, that exactly. will stay here. There's a gap. There is a long-standing gap in the jobs that are available and the training that's out there. It's not there's the training gap is overrated. But Barack Obama started his candidacy mm-hmm. in 2006, 2007, going to a high school that a group I'm familiar with helped open.
Yeah, and it was a manufacturing
school. High school. Instead, more high schools should be doing this. The Obama administration has been really consistent about worker retraining, mm-hmm. about portable skills, about getting people jobs in the manufacturing sector, about light manufacturing, about advanced manufacturing, and it's not going to solve every problem. But it is a way, and these are good jobs that can stay here and that can cause other jobs to be induced in the economy and it has a pretty high multiplier effect. And yet, because he has a D after his name,
yeah.
it is impossible for these people to vote for him.
And black skin.
Can't do it. They cannot fucking do it. And that is suicidal. And fortunately, these people are just going to age out and die one day.
Yeah.
And their problems will die off with them. While they are here, they are making enormous amounts of mischief because they cannot get their fucking tiny heads wrapped around the fact that Republican Party hates them mm-hmm. and has been mm-hmm. fucking them over. And it has nothing to do with their gun ownership or their Bible or anything else. Those are the things they turn to when everything else fails. But it's failing because the trickle-down Reaganomics that they voted for over and over and over again has screwed them. And they cannot admit it because then they become the chumps that liberals have always said they are. Yeah. And again, they would rather die than do that. So they are just running that rope out to the very end. And they're going to vote for the biggest, craziest, loudest, lionest scam artist, probably knowing on some level that he is all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because fuck you. America let me down. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to pull the pin on this grenade and roll it right out in the middle and boom, blow the whole fucking thing up. That's really why I think they're doing it.
Yeah.
They want to burn the system down. And who better to do it than Donald Trump?
And I hope that Hillary Clinton or whoever the nominee is, Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm. Will start to talk to these people about these coal miners in particular,
yeah.
about the future and how it's going to be hard. I mean, yeah. I think Hillary Clinton tried to do that with that one coal miner who confronted her.
Yes.
Barack Obama has tried to flow a lot of job training money into West Virginia and Kentucky.
Yes, he has.
And Joe Manchin, who's not my favorite Democratic senator by a long shot, but he has been trying to get federal funding for job training, for conversion of jobs to green energy jobs, to bring manufacturing to that area. And guess who's blocking it? You know, you don't have to guess.
It ain't the Congressional Black Caucus, I'll tell you that.
No, it ain't the Congressional Black Caucus. And so we need a program. And I've said to you, I know, that, you know, we're going to have to replace a lot of pipe, a lot of water pipes, not just in Flint, but all over the country. And there needs to be, you know, this makes you sound like Donald Trump, but I think he's right about this. It needs to be America first. You don't put a pipe in the ground that's paid for with federal tax dollars unless it's manufactured in the United States. Mm-hmm. And even if it costs more, you'd start making these kind of rules where tax money goes to American jobs. And I think it was Chris Matthews who said, you know, if you borrow money, which right now is it for the federal government can print money and borrow money at 0%.
Mm-hmm.
And start rebuilding every bridge in the United States that is below code, and uh-huh. most of them are. There's now a huge, I read an article today, there's a huge infrastructure program in Washington, an infrastructure crisis in Washington, D.C. even,
mm-hmm. yep.
of just crumbling buildings and crumbling pipes and streets with pipes underneath them that are collapsing and sinkholes, you know, on the streets of Washington, D.C. It's a real problem. Those are good jobs that can be union jobs.
Yes, they are.
That can bring income to people. And as Chris Matthews was pointing out, you borrow that money, you put these people to work, they pay taxes on their income, it pays for itself.
Yeah. And really you have does. Something that'll last 50 years.
And another 50 years, you've exactly. taken care of that infrastructure. Yeah. And school, let's build schools. Let's rebuild the Detroit school system. Let's rebuild. There's just so much potential to put people back to work.
And the problem is...
Republicans?
The problem is that we have, like the lead pipes that flow water under us, that work fine. As long as you don't run corroded crap down them, they work fine.
Yeah.
The corroding, rotting mental infrastructure of conservatives is so far gone
that
they have no idea how their government works at all.
Yeah.
They know that they're sitting there looking at a complicated machine that doesn't produce gold ingots like it was supposed to. And their solution is, excuse me, to beat it with a crowbar.
Yeah.
And just keep clubbing it until it stops doing whatever it does. They have no fucking idea what their congressman votes on.
Yeah.
Or that their congressman doesn't vote. Or that the Senate is not going to vote at all this year, or virtually not at all. They have no idea how budgets work. They have no idea how legislation gets passed at all. And they don't care because they're fucking morons.
Mm-hmm.
They have been listening to Fox News so long, all they know is there's a big government out there somewhere that's causing all of their pain. And Donald Trump is going to take a big hammer and smash it. And a bunch of golden eggs are going to come rolling out of it, and everyone's going to get rich.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are tens of millions of people who are that fucking stupid in this country, and they are incredibly dangerous to the rest of us. And they just selected their candidate for president, which brings us up to Tuesday.
Well, and I asked the question this week about which came first, a party that is completely unaware of their duty to govern.
Mm-hmm.
Or candidates who have no clue about what government is. And I don't know the answer to that, whether it was the philosophy or the people that came first.
If I had to theorize, I would theorize that like nice old people who are scammed out of their money and never call the cops because it's too goddamn embarrassing to admit that they are, oh my God, I'm a caricature. I'm one of those people. I'm one of those silly old people who gave all her money away or his money away. Republicans are simply so... deeply embedded in they're so buried under layer after layer after layer of bullshit that they can't get out of it. They are lost. They are addicts, and they can't get out of it without a major tectonic admission on their part that they have been wrong, that they don't know how their government works, that they have listened to liars over and over again for decades, and they don't care, that they've ignored people who've told them that putting that gun to your head and pulling the trigger is gonna hurt over and over again. And that at the end of the day, they just want to blame liberals and smash the system.
Yeah.
Because they're basically primates and they don't care. And they can't change. At this, they might have been able to change 20 years ago or 30 years ago or 10 years ago. But at this point, they are so lost and so doomed that they can't change. And this is why Trump really is kind of a horrifying miracle. Because Trump clarifies. Trump is God's way of saying, you know what? Liberals are right all along.
It really
does force the right to either embrace its fascism, which a lot of them are doing.
Oh, yeah.
Or find a way to weasel out of it. And that's what this week has been about. It's been about all of the people. Ted Cruz, first of all, I have in my notes that, first of all, Carly Fiorina fell off a stage.
Yeah.
But really, Ted Cruz fell off the stage. And he took the entire true conservative bullshit scam down with him. Because the Republican Party had their true conservative.
They had somebody that claimed to stand for something. True conservatism.
Every single thing.
Freaking out about gays in your bathroom.
Right.
Right?
Abortion, God. Yep. Government is the problem. Oh, I will repeal Obamacare. I will lay waste to liberalism and salt the earth where it stood.
And actually, of all the candidates, he was the true believer.
He was.
Cruz was the true believer. I really believe this shit. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
God himself has called me. And so the Republicans have been, among the many, 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 many ways they've been lying to themselves for decades, is that if only a true conservative were the candidate, then, you know, then the miracle
still,
would come.
There's still people out there on Twitter hoping for that and calling everyone a rhino.
Sure.
You know, either for supporting Trump or not supporting Trump. You're a rhino.
They had their true conservative. They had their perfect, true, honest to God, dyed in the wool, batshit crazy.
He wants to repeal Obamacare, cut spending, cut taxes, cut everything, Everyone stand on their own. Bring Jesus back into the White House. Be white before white people. Be for white straight Christian people. And yeah, he was the true believer.
And
this know-nothing carnival barker wiped him out.
That's right. And so and watching like Ross do that, Cardinal Ross do that.
Yeah.
Watch in the New York Times yesterday saying essentially the true conservatism has died.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could have told you that 20 years
ago.
I've been telling you that for 11 years, and you haven't been listening to me. So I guess I get your column now, and you get to go be a blogger somewhere, which I think would be totally fair.
That'd be fair.
But this is, boys and girls, moms and dads, cats and kittens, this is the moment, this little period right here, as they are running around like chickens with their heads cut off, terrified of all the chickens that are coming home to roost. Now is one of those moments when we can take down the Republican Party.
There's a window open that's been open before for a very brief moment, and I think this is going to be just as brief.
Yeah, it will.
But there really is a moment when there's a puncture in the Beltway bubble of, oh my God, this actually has happened and we actually have to deal with it. We can't both cider Donald Trump.
And even though they're desperately trying.
Yep.
I mean, I just finished writing a post about a guy named Elliot A. Cohen, who's a Bush administration's defense guy, writing about how desperately he wants a third party because, you know, Donald Trump, but the extremes on the left, because I need some place to park my vote so I can pretend it wasn't my fault. And that's really all this third party talk is. It's Tea Party for rich people.
Yeah.
It's I want my own funny hat and my own slogan so I can put my vote somewhere that doesn't back Hillary Clinton, but isn't supporting Donald Trump. So that after the election, I can say, don't blame me. Wasn't my fault. I had nothing to do with it. And that's really all the Tea Party ever was. It was a big scam so that a bunch of lying Republican douchebags could pretend that they never supported Bush. Well, this is exactly the same thing. They're desperate for a place to park their vote so that they won't be held responsible for the rise of Trump, even though the rise of Trump was 30 years coming. And for 29.9 of those years, they were perfectly okay with every step their party took to get them to where they are today.
And a lot of them are admitting that way too late. But there have been several essays this week about, you know, I let Ann Coulter go on and I let the birthers go on. And I did all these mea culpas of... Mm-hmm. You know, my party's been crazy for a while, and I've known it. I have let it happen because I wanted to win elections.
See, I read that.
Yeah.
I read that Howe.
Yep, that was one of them.
Except, you know, paragraph number 22 is, on the one hand, I'm not going to become one of those insufferable right-wingers who smears everybody. On the other hand, I'm not going to become some lefty who puts rainbow avatars on everything to show how progressive I am. Because both sides. It's still goddamn both sides.
Because he's got to make sure that his resume looks okay to the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah, he's got to.
And that really is where the dividing line is for anyone that's in media or television is, will I have a job in December?
Yes.
And regardless of what I say, and I have to angle it whatever way I'm going to angle it, whether it's Bill Kristol saying third party, although he can say whatever he wants and always have a job, obviously. Yeah.
There's something going on there.
He's a special case.
He's a special case, but he's a leading indicator of the deep conspiracy in the media to keep certain people absolutely protected at all costs. And no one will tell us why.
Yeah.
But
the smaller fish are definitely posturing one way or another. And those who don't have to posture, who really can hold on to some sort of core principles, is the Bush family.
Right, because they got theirs.
They've got more money than God, and they're not going to be in office anymore.
Right.
So they can just say, well, we're opting out this year. And didn't they say they weren't going to vote?
I don't know, but they're really quiet. I mean, Mitt Romney,
and they're not going to the convention, and they're not participating in this. So,
And one of those people is David Frum,
former
Bush speechwriter, who has written a marvelous article. He said laughingly in the Atlantic, where he has a job because he knows people, in which he says Hillary Clinton could be a truly great president if only she takes this opportunity to build a cross-party coalition. Where someone like, say, David Frum could find a work find a job.
Speechwriter.
You know, a party where I could, you know, find a teat to feed off of.
Yeah, right.
And that's, again, they're posturing for, where am I going to land once this all falls apart? Who's going to hire me? Who's going to keep paying my mortgage and covering my, you know, hooker bills?
Yep.
And so, as we were saying, this has happened a couple of times before in recent memory. 9/11 was the first.
Yeah.
Not the attack, but the aftermath, which conservatives used as a get-out-of-the-90s free card.
Mm-hmm.
Every single thing that they said about Bill Clinton and how presidents should be treated and how elections should be run and whether deficits are good or bad, they completely negated, reversed, and abdicated after when Bush was president. Completely. They sold every principle that they swore they believed in during the Clinton administration because the terrorists said, well, 9/11 changed everything. No, it didn't change math. It didn't change your core constitutional principles that you said to have dated back 200 years. You just don't have principles. You have convenient tactical positions that you take in order to win elections.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first one. 9/11 was their get out of jail free card. It, yep. Nothing counted before Bush administration because 9/11 changed everything. The Tea Party was the second one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tea Party was a completely made up bullshit scam to get millions and millions of lying Republicans who had voted for Bush twice and cheered on every disaster he created. Get them off the hook for
every. It's another get out of jail free card every single time. Yeah.
And Trump is the third. Mm-hmm. Trump is the third strike. Trump is absolute final definitive proof of who they are, what they believe, and how fucking awful these people are and have been for decades. But so my question is, what you're watching now is both the party elite and the donor class and the media scramble for some way of pretending that this isn't their fault. They had nothing to do with it.
Yep.
They were never there. They never touched them in that special place. They didn't put the thing in their drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on video. Yeah, it's on YouTube. But so the fuck what? And pretending that... So they're trying to find a way out of this. But not a way to fix it, because there's no way to fix it, but a way that they're not to blame for it, and they can move right back to doing what they've been doing for years. Playing the both-siderist game, collecting a paycheck from the New York Times, the Washington Post, MSNBC, Fox News, etc., and their lives just go on as they've been going on. And this is a moment when we could actually stick a dagger right in the heart of the media if anybody knew how to get in the front door. Mm-hmm. And Rob Reiner did a very good job.
Yes, he did.
But we need about 20 more of those in public. Mm-hmm. We need Joe Scarborough shitting himself on stage in public. We need
and
someone...
everybody who's gotten in and tried to do that, tried to puncture Joe Scarborough or puncture that mentality has been fired.
Right.
And it's really obvious that that's what's happened. So... The wagons do circle, and I don't know how long this window is going to be open for people to say, look, you know, we did this. I did love how Barack Obama handled it on Saturday night to look at them all and go, you know, here we are wondering if Cleveland's going to blow up.
Yep.
And you did this. And he turns to the entire audience of Beltway pundits and Beltway hacks and said, and you did this.
You did it.
Good for him. Obama out, and he's going to be missed.
I'll miss him.
I'll miss him. All right.
But let's not bury him yet, because he's still the president for another 10 minutes.
Well, not only that, Driftglass, but he did announce, I mean, that was sort of the fluff story of the week, is that Molly Obama is getting into Harvard. She's going to take a year off first and then go to school. And Obama announced Saturday night that he's going to live in Washington for 2 years while his other daughter, Sasha, finishes high school.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not going real far away. And I think that's very interesting. You know, usually presidents
I'm sorry,
leave town.
I just had a flash on Samuel Jackson in Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
He's just going to walk the earth like Kane in Kung Fu, you know, having adventures. And wouldn't that be awesome, you know?
We're going to, the last story we want to talk about was what the headline in the local newspaper was today.
Yes,
why don't you talk about that?
Apparently, a whole bunch of state agencies are real, of state-funded agencies, the people that are funded by the state, are really tired of Governor Hedge Fund destroying the local economy and the state budget for no reason other than he wants to get rid of unions and he's a jerk. They're suing him. To get paid. They're suing him for $100 million to do his goddamn job.
Right.
And they're taking him to court, and whether they succeed or not is important. But it's equally important that the headline in my local paper was, Governor getting sued by people that he's been stiffing.
Yep.
Billionaire governor won't pay his goddamn bills because he doesn't believe he shouldn't have to because unions are evil.
Well, and I think it's sad that this has had to happen.
Oh, it
had
to come tragic.
Because this is the only way anything has gotten funded in the past 10 months
yep.
is by court order. You have to fund it. And so this is how we're running our state now, is by court order, period.
Our judicial system is our GoFundMe.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. for the state.
And that's a tragedy. That's not something to celebrate. That's a real tragedy.
No, but
I hope the state agencies are successful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Colette. Colette is 15 years old. She injured her front paw as a kitten, so now she holds it up in the air in a very dainty, ladylike way.
Oh.
And her human tells us that in her biopic, she will be played by Maggie Smith. All right.
Hello.
She's lying on a gorgeous quilt, which is clearly her quilt. And you should go visit Colette at our Facebook page and website. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local. And we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Driftglass, we got a beautiful letter from Cynthia. We want to say hi to Cynthia.
Hey, Cynthia.
She wrote us this week and said, although a lifelong proud liberal, I only recently, 1 month ago, discovered your podcast and your blogs.
What?
Yeah. They are now a regular part of my internet perusing. Additionally, I now consider Friday night my treat night because I get to listen to your latest podcast.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you both for your thoughtful commentary and outstanding humor. I just finished ordering something off of Amazon, which I clicked through on your podcast site. I wish I could do more, but I am a full-time grad student working 2 minimum wage jobs. Oh, my goodness. Cynthia, we love you.
Love you, Cynthia.
Yeah. And I don't have much income left after I pay bills. However, I do order health supplies and food products and textbooks from Amazon on a regular basis and will do so now only through the link on your site. Once again, thank you. Sincerely, Cynthia. Cynthia should know, and everybody should know, that in addition to getting a little credit every time you buy something through our link, the more you order, even if it's a small item, we are compensated. The percentage goes up the number of items that gets sold through that link. So if we have 100 items sold, we get, I think it's 6.5%. Oh. And then every 100 items after that, they add a half a percent to the overall take that we would get. Does that make any sense?
It does. So even if it's just a little bit of weed.
Yeah, even if you're just ordering that one hit of weed,
yeah,
that counts,
one joint.
That might bump us up into a higher percentage gained for the month over, you know, which would be a big chunk of change if we ever got up to 7 or 8%,
which is nice.
I think there's a top limit, but we've never tried there to figure out what that is because we'll never reach that.
We also want to remind all of the servicemen and women who we hear from and all of our minimum wage people and all the people who are just struggling out there.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't afford to kick in, don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is our gift to you, our present to you.
That's what we're doing. We're here to share and be a part of a family, and we hope that we are feeding you something. It's always been the purpose of this podcast to give people hope and to give people a vocabulary to talk about these issues. So, mm-hmm. and that's we don't. If we were doing this for the money, honey,
yeah,
we would have quit 200 episodes ago.
I'd be working for Red State. You know, all Barack Obama probably caused Donald Trump, and here's why.
Oh, actually. My God. It's kind of sad that Red State has become a real good anti-Trump blog in the past 3 days.
Well, inevitable. This is also inevitable, really. This is all just like, of course, this is like V for Vendetta.
It is V for
Vendetta. Dominoes falling.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah.
So just get out of their way. If you have to step, this is a crazy time of year and feelings are very high and tempers are very high and people's skins are very thin. Just step back, relax.
One of my colleagues and I agree that as far as Facebook is, excuse me, as far as Twitter is concerned, we're just going to be posting cat pictures for the next 82 days. The Democratic, the Democratic National Convention is over in 81 days.
It's over.
Like that's the closing ceremony.
It's over.
And something will be, one person will be a nominee.
Yes.
And the other person will shake hands with that person and say, oh, yeah, no, we're not going to have Donald Trump as president.
No,
screw that.
We cannot have.
Either one of them are going to say, my way or the highway. Yeah. No.
Yes. And now is not the time. If you are on, if you're watching a candidate soar or sink, or you're disappointed, or now is not the time to rub anyone's face in anything, or gloat, or be angry.
Or make any demands that someone drop out. I mean, that's just not necessary. And
be gracious in victory.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, humble in victory and gracious in defeat.
Yeah. Yeah. And whatever happens is going to happen. And I really think keep your eye on 81 days from now. Everyone's going to be on the same side. They really, really are.
Yeah.
And the people that choose to remain grumpy will not be part of that conversation.
Yeah.
We won't have time for it. So
they're you know, there's always that residual of grumpy people.
Yeah.
There just are. And
there certainly was in 2008. I mean, it was bitter. Yeah.
Well, in every organization I've ever been a part of, there's always that percentage who can't find it in their hearts to give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just human nature. That's everywhere. So be kind to each other and be a little expansive. And if you can't, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. Just listen to the Professional Life Podcast. It will say it for you.
And approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution. You can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Did I say go postal unions? Go postal unions. And please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. We are also on Google Play. Drift Class. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
The Internet Kitties will be skipping the GOP convention this year.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast. Recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Drift Class Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome! Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Drift Class.
Science Fiction University, we are reading your stories based on the pictures that we posted to our Facebook page and Twitter stream. If you are interested in following our podcast on Twitter to get notifications of new shows and other news, whatever that might be.
Stuff.
At ProLeft Podcast is where you follow.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to follow us individually for lots of other Twitter goodness, I am at Blue Gal, all one word.
And
Drift Glass.
I am at Mr. MR _Electrico.
And that's because Drift Glass was taken.
Yes, and I believe in property rights, and
right.
I don't believe in ripping people off. So there's a Drift Glass out there. It ain't me. Please don't bother them. They're very nice people, and they don't swear nearly as much as I do. So,
and we both have pretty active Twitter streams, so we would love to have you follow us. And do you tend to follow back, Drift Glass?
Sporadically.
Yeah.
And there's no rhyme or reason. I mean, my Twitter stream is now just a fire hose.
Yeah.
And so I can't keep track of anything. So following more people doesn't do them or me.
Oh, everybody. Good. Everybody's that way. Yeah. Once you reach that critical mass. But generally speaking, I go and anyone who retweets me or follows me, I go and check them out.
Mm-hmm.
And if they say I'm a Democrat or I'm a liberal or I'm politically active or I'm a gay rights activist or I'm whatever, if it looks like you're in our tribe, I go ahead and follow back just about everybody. So,
and with me, it really is if I'm having a bad day or I'm not paying attention or I'm just typing. This is a writer's secret.
Yeah.
My lovely wife often asks me, If I've read this or seen that or read this article or tapped into that particular stream, mm-hmm, my answer is always no. I'm writing. When I'm writing, that's literally all I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm tunnel vision focused on that one thing for maybe 3 hours, maybe mm-hmm. 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
and that's his OCD as opposed to my ADD. So
mm-hmm. I'm
all over the place while I'm writing.
I can't do it any other way. I just can't.
Yeah.
I write
yeah.
impressionistically sometimes,
yeah.
a dab here and a dab there, but I really cannot compose.
Yeah.
Any other way than that. And that means lots of things just whiz right past my head.
Yeah, that's fine. Or they wait 2 hours
yeah.
and then you go look at them again. And then by that time, there's 7,000 new tweets that you haven't read and aren't going to. So unless you need to go look that up. So
that's when the kids show up going, did you see what happened on the Instagrams today? And I say, what's an Instagram?
What's an Instagram? Yeah. Exactly.
So it's a lively writerly home we have here.
It is. It is. All
Speaking
right.
Speaking of which, let's get on with our project.
Writerly stuff. Yes, uh-huh. We have two submissions. I'm going to read the first one.
All right.
Both of these stories today are about the picture of the man at the machine of some sort with it's key punch operator tape whipping around his head, and there are musical notes and key punch tape in a very 50s style computer going around him, and he's kind of in a musical trance of some sort. So that's the picture, and both of the writers today have used that picture as an element in their story. All right, and we're going to start with David's. And David writes, Hugo Salento had one important skill. Of all the abilities in the universe, his was the most important, most powerful, more important than harnessing suns for power, more powerful than the most heavily beweaponed battle fleet, more vital than tissue regeneration and immortality. His power was words. More than that, his power was meaning. He alone could understand all of the languages of all of the species in the universe. And it was all possible through the machine. Words would pass effortlessly from mouths to his ears to his fingers on the specially designed keyboard, where he could translate them into the written form onto punch sheets, 4 languages simultaneously. And these translations were not rough approximations of meaning. They were exact meanings, down to the tiniest nuance. Through this, he allowed the species of the universe to communicate clearly with one another. Every shaded word, idiom, and slang, despite the many differences between species in culture and temperament, such that never could a misunderstanding lead to interstellar or even worse, intergalactic war. So trusted was his family at this sacred task that no one ever questioned his translations, as they were always true, always providing clear understanding, as they had been for generations, ever since his ancestors first built the machine over 10 millennia before. Which was why, as he translated away on a routine trade negotiation between the Serlak Federation of the Gondara Cluster and their former enemies in the Yabara Spirals, it never occurred to either party that they were about to be tricked into a short march to a conflict which could very well spell the end of the pan-galactic civilization. As Hugo began to type the first of his deliberate mistranslations that would lead to war, he mused to himself quietly, a grim smile cracking his face. This will teach them to make fun of my music. Ah ha ha, he's become a villain. Recall?
Well, I certainly, there's not much in the way of color,
mm-hmm.
but the names are pretty clear.
Yeah, I actually liked that the names were phonetically spelled out pretty much, so that when I read this for the first time silently, it didn't interrupt my flow.
Right.
And that's a conscious decision a writer can make. I liked how he did that, because you really did just sort of read the words. Gondara is spelled G-H-O-N-D-O-R-R-A. You know how to pronounce that.
Yeah.
It doesn't have weird symbols in it. It's not trying to put too many vowels together at the same time. And that was well done.
And there's a sense of scale.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is intergalactic. Multiple galaxies are involved. That's mm-hmm. hundreds of billions of stars times hundreds of billions.
I also like how he took the time to explain what the beauty of the translation was, that it didn't just translate the words, it translated idiom and it translated meaning and little nuances in language, mm-hmm. that is a very specific talent that this machine has that could be, completely necessary in a pan-galactic world. Yeah, yeah.
And I like the story. Mm-hmm. Let me be very clear. This is a story I could easily have seen in Astounding Magazine or magazine 50s, 60s.
For sure.
It's right in the wheelhouse. It's absolutely science fiction.
Yep.
There are questions an editor will have if you're going to pursue this and suggestions. For example, if it's his family, and they are certainly royalty at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They are the most important family in the nine galaxies or whatever it is. You might want to make him Hugo Salento the 17th or something like that. Be very clear that it's a long line of this sacred thing that's been passed down from generation to generation. Even though you say it, that adds a little bit more of a time scale to it. But there's also the question of, okay, how come no one's replicated this machine? And isn't it likely that civilizations that rub up against each other for millennia will learn each other's language, sort of?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
particularly if they're doing trade. I mean, if they're involved in trade, they're going to have more than one translator.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a certain level at which there was a Harlan Ellison story, I forget what it's called at this point, about this guy who figures out that the way to put a stop to intergalactic war is by staging a series of small... he builds a computer that explains to him, you have to have a whole series of small wars that sort of interlock with each other that produce this larger galactic unity. So he has a plan for deliberately starting a little war here, a little war there, and kidnapping that person and killing that person and blowing up that planet that all will make sense in the end. And I'd be interested to find out if this guy is going to subtly screw with the galaxies or if he's going to blow it all up at once.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, that's for four paragraphs, that's exactly where you should be. I really want to know what's his deal. Clearly someone doesn't like his music. I wouldn't want to piss this guy off.
Yeah.
And, but there's a question about the utility of a single machine and a single family that does all of this work.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just really critical communications.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, maybe it's, he's the official translator for the pan-galactic, whatever, United pan-galactic, whatever. So that he is very important and very high up. But he doesn't translate everything from everyone because you have to kind of have a limit to that. He would still be translating four languages at once, and be able to do that. Yeah.
He's like,
That's a real quibble.
Yeah. I envision sort of Mycroft Holmes, the unofficial most important person in the British government.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a go-between and a negotiator, as a translator. But this is a wonderful start to a story. It's absolutely pure science fiction. Keep up the good work.
Mm-hmm.
And you have raised questions in the reader's mind that they would like you to answer, and that's your job. So good job.
Good job. All right. So our next story is by Arliss Bunny, who has written to us in the past and is a fellow podcaster.
Yeah.
And you're going to be on their show. Is that right, Drifter?
I am. I'm going to be on Hopping Mad with Will McLeod. I believe that's the correct pronunciation. And Arliss Bunny. And
good for you.
I believe they tape sometime in the next day or two. And the show's on the 14th of May, I believe.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure how that works. And it should be exciting. They have a fine podcast, and they have invited me to join in the fun of kicking around some pundits and some ideas, and I'm delighted to do so.
And they write, they do a lot of podcasting about economics.
They do.
Both have backgrounds in economics. So, their podcast is also on Netroots Radio, like
it
ours is.
Is.
So with Justice Putnam. So, you can check it out there at Netroots Radio, or you can check it out at imhoppingmad.com. Mm-hmm. And, we are not promoting their show because Arliss Bunny submitted a story.
No.
We're promoting their show because Drift Glass is going to be on their show next week. So,
and having listened to them talk about economics on a couple of podcasts, I am punching way out of my weight class. So know that going in.
Well, that's fine. All right, so you're going to read Gödel Bethe Bach.
I am.
All right.
Which is, I believe, a play on Gödel Escherbach, which was a very fine book from the late 70s or early 80s, which talks about math and science and music. So guess which picture this was based on.
Same one, yeah.
The last thing she saw before the time slipped yanked her through its maw. That's how she thought of its breath, wet, sharp pull, was that poster from the 1950s, which was hanging, safely framed and behind glass, in pride of place above her office desk. The poster depicted what she had always known. The music of the universe was the code of the universe. The results from her recent experiment had revealed to all those with the appropriate security clearances that she was competently leading her research team ever closer to a Rosetta Stone moment of decoding the mystery. The answer seemed so close these days. It was almost right there in her paws. There was always a soft, lip-smacking pop when Bethy emerged on the other side of the slip, and it invariably worried her. Frankly, as the trillionth generation descendant of a prey animal, she was naturally just a bit concerned about everything. The thought of attracting unnecessary attention made her twitchy. It isn't like they didn't have rabbits when Johann Sebastian Bach was alive. It's just that rabbits had been unlikely to be attending concerts and quite likely to be attending dinner as the main course. Humans hadn't really progressed much since then, Bethy thought. They had done well for a few 100,000 years, and then their progress had sort of run down. Rabbits, who could breed a new generation every 29 days, had kept their own counsel and jumped right on over humans in the evolutionary race for greater intelligence. In the intervening years, rabbits had either done for themselves or caused to be done things now considered to be the, quote, greatest accomplishments of mankind, unquote. Rabbits had taken on immense scientific challenges and resolved them with a focus and persistence one rarely saw outside of the lagomorph and rodents communities. Global warming? Check. Food production? Check. Infectious diseases? Check. Overpopulation? Check. Bethy spared a moment to think of the heroes of the early days who had given their lives in the laboratories of humans in order to learn and communicate information back to the Warren. She thought about the kind of bravery it had taken to do those jobs, and her heart broke just a little, and for the 100th time. Quickly coming back to the present, well, the present of the past, she wrinkled her nose at the smell of unwashed human feet and stood in the dark of that long-ago concert hall. Bethy promised herself that when she got home that night, she would take a hop down to the meadow and leave a bouquet of dandelions at the base of the long, black marble wall of the Heroes Memorial. Maybe she would even sign the book this time. Signing was always difficult for her. She didn't like other bunnies to see her cry. Bethy had worked hard to gain the respect of the Warren. Even if they thought she was soft, if there was any hint that she was fluffy, she would never get them to sign off on the next part of her research grant, and, for Bethy, the research was everything. She knew, she just knew that her research would be the next big leap forward.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay, recall. I love the long marble wall that Arliss handles very well, the time travel.
Yeah.
That, you know, the present of the past and how she has to be here now in the era of Johann Sebastian Bach and not focus on all the people that died since the point at which she is at because she's got to focus on whatever her mission is to go back. And we don't know that from this four paragraphs, but we do know that she has to stay in whatever moment she's in. Bethy is a scientist. And I think there is a voice here that's very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Distinctive?
Authentic.
Yeah.
Authentic. Yeah. I think it's a really authentic voice. You do feel as though this is being narrated. I mean, it's being narrated by a third person, but it's also her voice is in there and it's intelligent and logically thinking and processing what's happening. And, you trust this narrator.
Yeah.
Right away. And that is something that writers do unconsciously, but if you don't do it, you notice right away that you haven't done it. So I like the voice of this.
It doesn't get bogged down in the technology either.
No.
The gadgetry. It just,
right.
There's this thing, it happened, and here we are.
And here we are. We have mm-hmm. conscious, intelligent, self-aware rabbits mm-hmm. who have pretty much taken over the Earth. And we don't need to explain how that happened or, you know, exactly. Well,
there's a lovely, at least a tip of the hat to that old cartoon about the lab rat.
Mm-hmm.
Who says he's training the scientists?
Yes, yes.
Every time I ring a bell, he brings me cheese. and clearly the rabbits have been intelligent for a long time.
Yeah.
Just never let on.
Let on, yeah. Yeah. I would like to see just a little bit, although I guess you're going to get into this later, Arliss, and maybe it's just that I want to know more, but that decoding the mystery and how that relates to music. You say that in the first paragraph and then it's gone completely. And that's okay because you're explaining why a rabbit is doing all of this. But yeah, I want to know what's the mystery and how does it relate to music?
She's the narrator, which mm-hmm. I assume is a she. I don't know, but Bethy sounds a little
it's a female. Well, doesn't she? It's a she.
She's saw that. Yeah. Is going back to visit Johann Sebastian Bach
mm-hmm.
at some
mm-hmm.
really critical moment in mm-hmm. history mm-hmm. to learn mm-hmm. something really important about music and the universe. I also like the smell of unwashed human feet.
Yeah.
Because you dropped it in there at the exact moment when you mm-hmm. needed a little bit of a vivid pop
mm-hmm.
of, oh,
mm-hmm.
we're back on the dirty cobblestones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you did. And that was just enough. And the dark concert hall was just enough to let me know that you have radically changed location, which you're telling me, but that makes me smell it and see it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So good
mm-hmm.
job.
I think there's a comedic opportunity here, too.
Yeah.
When you consider how many children Bach had.
Yeah.
That he was the rabbit of his day.
Yeah.
So there's that. But good going. Good going. And look forward to reading the rest of this. Arliss actually sent us more of the chapter mm-hmm. That we didn't get a chance to get into, but I'll look forward to checking that out and hope you go further with it. That is very, very good.
And embedded in the title, I mean, the original book is Gödel Escherbach.
Yeah.
And it's about the eternal golden braid. It's mm-hmm. it's about logical systems and musical uh-huh. systems and the system of art of Escher that sort of exceeds its own limits.
Mm-hmm.
It creates a geometry or a music or an art that actually transcends its medium.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a relationship between those three that's mysterious and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So good title, good everything. You're moving in the right direction. I don't see any obvious, you know, gross context errors or spelling errors or anything like that took me out of the story. So just keep doing what you're doing.
Very good. Well, thank you, Driftglass.
My pleasure, darling.
Yeah, we'll read two more. Maybe we can find two that about the other, what I call the fish picture.
Yeah, the fish pick.
The fish pick next week on Science Fiction University.